And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Open talk to begin the program today. We're going to be talking about, well, it's an interesting take, and I would say a bit of a controversial take on public education today. A little bit later on the program, we'll be chatting with guest Kevin Soling, but that's a little bit later. Open talk to begin with. I do hope that many of you were able to hear our special edition of It's Your Turn yesterday when we carried the CBS radio special on the anniversary of the moon landing 50 years ago, July 1969. That was a tremendous special. I sat here in the studio and I was awestruck at the amount of work that went into putting that together. They had the sound clips from Mission Control 50 years ago. I had interviews with the two surviving astronauts from that moon mission, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins. They had interviews with the children of the astronauts, including children of the late Neil Armstrong. It was a great, great, great program. I had forgotten how exciting it was when we used to watch space launches live on TV. Yeah, well, let's talk about that a little bit on the program today. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk at 283-2525. Does anybody remember watching the first steps of mankind on the moon 50 years ago? The date was July 20th, 1969. They actually launched from Cape Canaveral, the Kennedy Space Center, on the 16th. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the launch. It took 3 days to get to the moon. 3 days. They got there on the 19th, and then they orbited around the moon for a while and, you know, got everything ready for the lunar descent, which took place the next day on June 20th. Anybody remember watching it on TV? I have vague memories. My morning colleague, Kate, asked me yesterday, you know, do you remember exactly where you were, what you were doing? I said, no, I don't, quite frankly. Not, you know, that perfectly. I have vague memories of watching. It seems to me it was at night. I don't remember whether it was late at night. I mean, it wasn't in the middle of the night. But it seems to me it was dark when I was watching it on TV. Fuzzy black and white pictures. You know, even if you weren't around then, you've probably seen the video of them on TV. Pretty primitive pictures. But we think this was 50 years ago, and we were getting live TV from the moon, for goodness sakes. It was pretty amazing, really amazing. And listening to that special that we had for you yesterday afternoon just took me back how dangerous it was for these guys. Really, really. I mean, they didn't know whether they were coming back or not. They did not know. Well, do you have any memories? Were you watching 50 years ago this week? 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program here today. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah. I was sitting here thinking about that, like when it was, where I was. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was a Sunday night, because this is what I remember. Mm-hmm. My family had gone to church that night. And we wanted to stop and get something to eat on the way home, and my dad said, no, I want to go home and watch the spacewalk. So if I'm not mistaken, it was a Sunday night, and I would guess probably around 8, 9 o'clock.
I vaguely remember it being dark outside when I was watching. I have no idea what day of the week it was. But if you remember going to church, then
I only remember that because we went to church in the evening, and like I said, we wanted to stop and get something to eat, and my dad wanted to get home and watch, you know, the spacewalk.
Well, you can easily look up their perpetual calendars online. You know, in a couple of seconds, you could look up what day of the week it was. But I can't help you on that. I'll take your word for it that it was Sunday.
Yeah, don't take my word for it. But that's what I remember. You know, I would have been very small, you know, and but that's only what I remember.
Have you watched any of the specials that have been on TV? And we had a special yesterday here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Have you caught any of that stuff marking the 50th anniversary?
I watched a little bit during CBS had in the morning. They broke into programming, and I watched a little bit of that. Hearing your review, I wish I would have watched more now.
But, well, there'll be more on over the next few days.
I would guess. In fact, I don't know, maybe they're even, like, you could catch the specials on demand or something.
Oh, absolutely,
I haven't even looked, so...
Well, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for sharing your memories, even though they are a little bit vague, and you were very young.
Yeah, I would have been very young.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, probably like in elementary school, not any more than that. But all right, thank you. Have a great day.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
283-2525 is the number. Do you remember watching man's first step on the moon 50 years ago this week? Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Oh, just waiting for the hot weather here.
Well, you don't have much of a wait. It's going to get brutally hot over the next few days.
90 plus.
The latest forecast from the National Weather Service is mid-90s, both Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, that's the real thing there.
Yeah, that's about as hot as I want it, that's for sure.
There were stories out this morning, Dave, from mainstream sources, all the major outlets, all Palm Ridge News Guard approved non-state news stories that... Congressman Chris Smith from Jersey, he's like a 20-term Republican congressman. I guess they just were finalizing the Pentagon budget here lately, and he was able to get something in there about Lyme disease and weaponizing ticks research. He wants questions answered about what all they've been doing with these over the years and what exactly has after effects been, if anything, or whatever. So
that would be good news.
That sounded pretty interesting.
Sooner they get a vaccine for Lyme disease, the better, and I'm sure I hope they're working on it as hard as they can.
Well, that might be a new money-making opportunity to counteract something they quite probably created from out of nowhere.
Well, could be.
Maybe not, but a lot of information leads to it. That they definitely made it up. So anyway, this guy, he's was able to get this in there, an amendment of something they called it, that they want these questions answered. So I don't know how long the process will take, but might be something here in the near future about that.
And will we ever get the answers, or will it be like the JFK assassination where we still don't know for sure?
Well, right, and there's another thing. There's money connected to it. It's like a line item expenditure to do this, like millions of dollars. Well, he sponsored like $180 million outlay here a while back for tick research, and now just this inquiry is an extra expense. So how can that be? You know, what these people are already on the payroll. You just don't send them a memo and say, here, answer this question. How does it accrue extra costs? I don't know.
One thing the government can do very easily is spend money, that's for sure.
Oh, my God, yes. It's just Well, just listen to your news every day, and well, it's not just your station. I'm sure there's stations all over the state here, the country, that announce these grants and new programs and on and on. I swear it's every day.
Do you think that? You think the federal government should spend more money to go back to the moon?
Well, I don't know. They say they can't do it. They lost all their lost all the information and hardware and all the guidance. And
well, they can get that. The biggest problem is they don't have any rockets right now since they retired the space shuttle 8 years ago. We don't have any rockets to get there. They're trying to build a new one.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another make-work project, I guess, that would consume hundreds of billions of dollars. And
I assume that you're not in favor, then, of going back to the moon. It doesn't sound like
it. Some private place wants to make it, that made honest money somehow. And that doesn't count Elon Musk. I don't consider his earnings honest. Mm. Or a lot of these other people that maybe Burt Rutan and Gina Yeager. Remember them? Chuck Yeager's daughter, Gina Yeager, and Burt Rutan, they flew around the world in nonstop in that real small little plane loaded with fuel.
Yeah.
And aircraft people and rockets.
They're not going to go to the moon in that thing, I guarantee you. What was it called?
Well,
the Gossamer.
I mean, somebody like them, honest people that like real money and whatever, real backers with something like that would sound good, but can I ask who this guest you have coming on? I just caught you announcing Kevin somebody on some new whiz-bang education method.
His last name is Soling, S-O-L-I-N-G.
Uh-huh.
And he is a professor, I think, at Harvard. I'm not sure. But it's a pretty controversial subject that he discusses. He thinks that public schools are virtual prisons, and that we need to change the whole model of education because kids hate school. So I don't.
Oh, really? I was thinking something. I couldn't agree with him more on that basic premise.
Well, then you'll want
to. That is absolutely the definite conditions they're living under. I can agree with him on that for sure. I thought he was going to say we needed some new multi-billion dollar plan, something more money pumped into these operations is what I assumed it was going to be. But that's a refreshing change of pace there. I'll be glad to hear what he says, and he's from Harvard. Huh.
Well, he'll be coming on with us in about 15 minutes. So. Hey, good to talk.
Good
to talk with you today,
my friend.
Department
of Education, their new their new agenda and goals are for kids to be able to read by 8 or 9 years old.
I don't know. Listen, I got a scoot. Good to talk with you today, my friend.
Okay, yeah, Dave, keep an eye on that report there from the Lyme disease stuff.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, will do. Take a break. We'll be back with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a moment. Calling all gardeners. Very soon now, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul will begin their weekly pickups of excess garden produce. In fact, they'll be kicking it off starting on July 20th. That happens to be this Saturday. Yeah, just a few days down the road. They'll be picking up fresh excess vegetables from your backyard garden at St. Michael's Social Hall on Center Avenue. So you can take your stuff there Saturday morning. They'll pick it up, and first thing on Monday, it'll be delivered to needy families through the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They've done this for several years now, and it's been a tremendous success. Most backyard gardeners have some stuff left over, you know, especially when everything starts to come on at once, the tomatoes or the peppers or the beans or whatever. So I don't want all your stuff, of course, but if you have a little bit left over, consider donating to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. They'll begin their Saturday morning pickups this Saturday at St. Michael's Social Hall on Center Avenue on Butler's South Side. If you have any additional questions about this, you can call Lou at 724-991-6094. get information on that. It's a great program, and it's a real help to needy families who patronize the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store and Food Cupboard. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. Society of St. Vincent de Paul. One of our other sponsors on the program is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center, where they will package your items up for shipping. It's very, very convenient. You don't have to worry about hunting for a box or bubble wrap or special mailing tape or labels or any of that stuff. Just take your items to the Gone Postal Butler location in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants on Newcastle Road here in Butler. You can ship any way you want. UPS, U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, that's your choice. But they'll package your items up for shipping. Go on Postal Butler. They have other services too, copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They even have an official notary. They're open Monday through Friday. Shockey Mini Storage Complex behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant. That's Goin' Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Talking about the 50th anniversary of man's first steps on the moon this week, 50 years ago, July 20th to be exact, of 1969. I've seen some wire stories about whether this means a whole lot to people today. There are certainly a couple of generations who, you know, have no personal memory of it. They weren't around 50 years ago. And there are other folks who were young kids, sometimes very small, and don't have any memory of it either. And since America has not sent any men in space for several years now, at least on our own, we have to take our astronauts over to Russia and have the Russians send them up to the International Space Station. We pay them millions of dollars, by the way, to do that every time. It's not, you know, space flight, space launches. It's not a big deal in America anymore. We just don't do it very often. And there are certainly at least one generation, maybe two, who has no memory of watching launches on TV. You know, I watched many of them as a kid. It was a new thing. It was spectacular. And you know, you watched the countdown and the rocket take off, you know, whatever the mission was, whether it was Gemini or Mercury or later Apollo or the space shuttle. We sometimes forget how dangerous it was. I was listening to Michael Collins yesterday on the special that we had for you here on It's Your Turn from CBS Radio yesterday. Michael Collins was the astronaut who stayed in the mothership that orbited around the moon while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin went down to the lunar surface and did the moonwalk and picked up some rocks and so on and so forth, and then had to come back. And Michael Collins said his biggest concern was that they wouldn't be able to get off the surface of the moon. And I'd forgotten about that. Now, they went down in the lander. It was called the Eagle. Remember the famous words? Houston, the Eagle has landed. And they had to fire that thing up again to get back up to the mothership that was orbiting the moon. And, you know, when they pressed the button, if that rocket engine didn't ignite, that was it. There was absolutely no way of getting Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin off the surface of the moon. They would have died there. And Michael Collins said that yesterday. He's 88 years old now, by the way. And he was interviewed and said, that was my biggest concern, you know, that I'd be coming back by myself and they would die there. But fortunately, they pressed the start button and the rocket fired and they came back up, hooked up with the mothership and then back to Earth on July 24th. I had forgotten so much of that until I listened to that special yesterday. 283-2525, our number. It's Open Talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
I listened to the lady who called earlier, and I'm much older than she is. 50 years ago, I was 37, and I'm shaking my head thinking, okay, I had, at that time, four kids, two little ones. You know, I know what happened. I know I watched it, but the details are fuzzy in my mind. You know, I don't know about you.
No, same with me. I know.
I remember it, Dave, but it's like, why can't I remember, you know, more details? It was exciting. Heaven only knows, you know, for something like that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And while other people were talking, I was thinking, how do I feel about all this money that's going to be spent to do this? And then you started talking about Michael Collins and his reaction, you know, about what if you can't get off. And I think to myself, I would not make a good explorer of any kind. I'm fascinated by what they do, and I'm speaking as the grandmother of a young man who got his doctorate in astrobiology.
Oh, wow.
He's studying life on other planets. He's in Tokyo now at the Life Institute of Technology. He delivers papers all over the world.
Goodness gracious.
But
wow, that's fabulous.
This is kind of beyond my grade level, you know, my shop level. I admire what these people do. I really do. He worked for NASA for a couple of years before he went on, you know, to further his education.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about all this stuff about the moon landing, and I don't know. I thought, I don't know about other people, but I have such mixed emotions about all our problems here on Earth and, you know, what needs to be taken care of.
I hear you on that, but it was such a sense of pride for Americans when we did this.
That's what I'm saying to you. I have such pride in my young man and what he's achieved at his age, and the fact that part of it has been on NOVA, you know, what he's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
He studied out at Tempe. They had the special program. That's where he got his doctorate, about what they're doing. And I am. I know it fills you with a sense of pride and wonder, Dave.
Wonder
about these things.
Wonder and admiration. I found out so many little tidbits that I never knew before. Buzz Aldrin, who was the other guy with Neil Armstrong that went down to the surface of the moon, after they landed, he privately took communion, and that was never made public.
No, that was not made public.
No, he was a member of a Westminster Presbyterian church somewhere, whether it was in Texas, I'm not sure where he was from, but his pastor had prepared communion for him, and he took it with him. And then once they landed safely, and
I'm saying to you, I have such mixed emotions about this. I really do. It's a sense of wonder, and yet I don't know. You know, when you asked about how we feel about it, I really don't know. And as for young people, they might not remember that. So maybe this attempt this time is something that they will remember in the future.
Well, we did it at great cost. I was watching program last night. In fact, it was NOVA last night on PBS. And, we had three Apollo astronauts who were killed during a practice. They the module caught fire on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral, and they died instantly. And I mean, we forget about these things, you know?
That's why I say I have a set of mixed emotions, you know, the pride and knowledge that my husband, I've watched NOVA my entire life because my husband was a physics teacher, and my grandson dedicated his thesis to his grandpa because he was the one who inspired him.
Isn't that wonderful?
To go for this. But like I say, listening to you talk and listening to the woman who spoke about how young she was and she thought it was Sunday night, and I got to thinking, gee, I remember watching it. I can't remember what night it was.
we'll dig that up. That'll be easy to find. I just don't have the time to do it right now, but I can find it in a minute or so here. Listen, I have to run, but I really appreciated talking to you.
I just wanted to offer my two cents worth because it is fascinating to me what they do now. And like I say, I just had a, you know, kind of how do I feel about this kind of thing moment.
So
always good to talk with you, Dave, and I enjoy listening to your programs.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah, bye. So long now. It was last night when I was watching NOVA. You know, they had a fairly primitive computer. I mean, it wasn't that primitive, but it did all the guidance work for them and so on and so forth on the Apollo mission. But this is 50 years ago. There was no mouse. There was no touch screen. And how did they communicate with the computer? And I'd never even thought about that before. They had a keypad, a very primitive light-up keypad, and there were certain commands that they could type into there. It was like code words that they would. That certain numbers meant certain things, and they would type it in, and that's how they communicated with the computer. No mouse, no touch screen, and none of that stuff 50 years ago. Amazing. Amazing stuff. We have to take a break. We'll do that. We'll be back with more here on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Nice to have you with us. We'll be right back.
How would you describe driving and parking in Pittsburgh? Long, stressful? How about expensive? If you are answered yes to any of these, then the Butler Transit Authority is here to help. With comfy coach buses equipped with free Wi-Fi and USB ports, commute to Pittsburgh stress-free and economically. With fares starting at just $3.87, not sure if it's for you? Try it out for free. BTA is offering 4 full weeks of transportation completely free the third week of May, June, July, and August. For more information, schedules, and park and ride locations, visit butlertransit.com.
Catch a wave at Waldemere.
Waterworld opens daily at 11 a.m. Enjoy all the exciting slides, brave the waves in the massive wave pool, and splash and play in the action-packed Kids Zone and Battle of Lake Erie water playgrounds. Or take a leisurely ride around the endless river and kick back and unwind in the heated relaxing pools. And Waldemere opens at noon with incredible thrill rides like the exciting Chaos. Family rides like the SS Wally and Kittyland for your little ones. Plus there's games, gift shops, and delicious treats like fresh creamy fudge and Hershey's ice cream. And all parking is free. For discounted tickets, Wally cards, season passes, and advanced rental of cabanas and lockers, visit Waldemere.com.
Catch a wave, catch a day at Waldemere. Your wet and wild summer getaway. Excitement waits for you at Waldemere. Waldemere in Erie, PA.
Welcome back. It is the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISI. We're coming up about a minute away from 1 o'clock in the afternoon. A couple of program notes before we talk with our guest today, Kevin Soling. First of all, there's Pirate Baseball immediately after our It's Your Turn program today. We'll be going to Busch Stadium in St. Louis for the Pirates and the Cardinals. So do keep that in mind. And also, we have a book talk coming up on Monday. Leslie Pallotta from Cranberry Community Library has selected the book, The Storied Life of A.K. Fikry, by Gabrielle Zevin. I have just started to read it, and hopefully we'll be able to finish before Monday. But that'll be fun. It's always fun to talk with Leslie. So keep that in mind as well. All righty, we're going to take another break here, and then we'll get ready to hook up by telephone with Kevin Soling coming up here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
Grab your blankets and chairs. The Saxonburg Fireman's Parade, the largest fireman's parade east of the Mississippi, is tomorrow at 6:30. The Fireman's Carnival in Saxonburg runs through Saturday and is open 6 to 11 nightly. Don't miss the fun. It's an annual tradition, the Saxonburg Carnival.
Gut feeling or chronic pain? It could be both. Chronic pain is a symptom of many GI disorders, including endometriosis, PCOS, pelvic inflammatory disease, IBS, hepatitis, and many others. If you're looking for a holistic, all-natural pain relief without the risk of side effects or addiction, medical cannabis might be right for you. Find out how to get your medical marijuana card by calling Compassionate Certification Centers at 888-316-9085 or visit cccregister.com.
Going to be talking about the Student Resistance Handbook. Listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is the author of that handbook, Kevin Soling. Kevin, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Well, that's an arresting title that catches people's attention for sure. The Student Resistance Handbook. Sounds like something out of the 1960s, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, certainly inspired by Anarchist Cookbook and those kinds of texts in part in terms of trying to be shocking and to push for revolutionary change.
So what inspired you to write this Student Resistance Handbook?
So I happen to have gone to one of the, you know, the better public schools, did well, wasn't a disciplinary problem, went off to, you know, good colleges, and it was sort of an obligation of mine to speak out against compulsory schooling, because others who didn't have such a good experience are usually accused of sour grapes, or if their environment is considered to be an exception or something. So the burden was on me to share the information about just how destructive the school environments are and how ineffective they are at everything they pretend to claim that they're supposed to do. Being in school is an assault on human dignity. It's a degrading experience. The children are deprived of autonomy. They're under surveillance at all times. Every aspect of their life is under control, from what they can, who they can associate with, to what they're permitted to think. But most importantly, they don't achieve any of their stated missions. They don't provide vocational skills. Socialization is not something that's healthy in that environment. You know, all people are bullied in school and forced to be with people they hate, and they can't interact with friends as they'd like. They don't instill democratic principles. They're a despotic environment. And most importantly, they do not impart literacy skills or math skills. The Department of Education every 4 years prints a nation's report card, and the most recent one showed that only 25% of 12th graders are proficient in math, and only 37% of 12th graders are proficient in literacy skills in reading and writing. And of those percentages, many learned at home, and those numbers don't take into account all the people who dropped out of school.
Do you think that, and those are disturbing numbers, but do you think that's the fault of the schools or the fault of students who just don't care and aren't trying?
Well, I mean, schools make kids not care. That's the important thing. You know, students, you know, children are born, you know, it's wired in all of our DNA wanting to learn. But schools make learning, first they force people to go against their instincts and not be able to pursue the things they're interested in. I mean, that's the second lesson of school. The very first lesson of school is obedience to authority. If you're a teacher of a classroom, you can't pretend to, you know, have a student lesson, a lesson plan, without having everyone sit down, shut up, eyes forward. And that takes up most of teachers' time, you know, early on. And it's breaking the students until they,
until they have no will and they learn obedience to authority, and it's arbitrary authority that's abusively held, because the rules in school are only applied to school, and nowadays students are arrested for violating school rules, which aren't even crimes, and yet they're taken out in handcuffs quite frequently. But everything about how schools are run violate everything that we know about learning. There's sleep deprivation, age segregation, the top-down authoritarian model. Study after study shows that children learn best from their slightly older peers. They develop a skill, they'll pass it down to their slightly younger friend. But in schools, you're taught to fear people that are older than you and hate people that are younger than you, and you're largely segregated. Whatever contact you do have, it's a violent one, typically. Homework, there's no evidence showing that homework is constructive, and again, homework also drives students away from learning. People learn best when they're self-motivated, pursuing answers to questions that reflect their interests and achieving goals that they've set for themselves. And under those conditions, your learning is joyful. We have a very anti-intellectual society because we associate learning with schools. And that's the fundamental problem. So, people are turned off, but the fact is it's the schools that are responsible for that.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit and let me play the devil's advocate, if I may, Kevin Soling, because I'm sure that the initial reaction from some of our listeners is, well, my goodness, if you didn't have rules in school, it would degenerate very quickly into anarchy. How do you respond to that reaction?
Absolutely. If you don't have rules in school, it devolves to anarchy. Yeah, schools are just institutions of rules, but they're not institutions of learning. That's precisely true. Schools are governed by social efficiency, which means that they're all about rules, but learning is not something that takes place in any dramatic, meaningful way that it would take place in another environment or even the absence of schooling. What do you want to achieve? If you're a parent, what do you want of your child by sending them to a school? A school is an intervention. It's an experimental intervention, quite literally. If once you do something, place a system in, you have some kind of expectation or some kind of hypothesis. The alternate, the null hypothesis is doing nothing. Schools have never been placed in any kind of experimental test. There's no one has ever justified the existence of school or proved that the alternative is superior, but there are things that we absolutely definitely know are a consequence of schooling. We know that schooling diminishes empathy. If you want a less empathetic, a less caring child, send them to school. If you want a child that is less creative, send them to school. If you want a child that is more likely to develop depression and anxiety, send them to school. Here's one of the most disturbing things. If you want a child that's actually suicidal, no better place than to send them to school. The Centers for Disease Control every 6 years or so publishes a study about youth risk behavior, and the numbers are disturbing. 1 out of 12 high school students, on average, makes an attempt on their life. 1 out of 6 seriously considers suicide. 1 out of 6. That means if you have a class of 24 people, which is pretty average, maybe there are more students in some classes for sure. It means that that on average, if you look out at the kids, 4 of those students are seriously considering killing themselves. And we know there's a causal relationship between being in school and suicidal ideation, because self-esteem and self-worth are tied to grades. Social standing is another thing that causes suicidal thoughts, and that's very precarious in school. And of course, the anxiety and depression, which are also a consequence of the environment, because they produce chronic stress. And they've measured, objectively, they know that schools cause chronic stress because they've measured cortisol levels in the hair of children before going to school and after, and the same age students who don't go to school do not have the cortisol levels of students in schools.
We're chatting, listeners, if you've joined us a few minutes late on this segment of It's Your Turn. Nice to have you with us. Our guest is Kevin Soling, author of the Student Resistance Handbook. Well, if there are all these negatives about sending your child to school, Kevin. What would you suggest as an alternative for, you know, young people to learn math and English and languages and that sort of thing? What would be your alternative?
Sure. Well, it's important to understand that an alternative, I mean, there are alternatives, and I'll get to that, but it's important to understand that an alternative is not necessary in terms of appreciating that compulsory schooling needs to be abolished, and that it's not the fault of any of the participants. I don't blame the teachers. I don't blame the administration. It's the institution, the way the institution was designed. It subverts all of the best efforts and intentions of very good people, you know, who work in the system, but they cannot succeed. But if you look at any destructive, you know, if you have pancreatic cancer and it's terminal, and the doctor said, well, I can do bloodletting or I can put leeches on you, and you're like, well, you know, that might cause more pain and suffering, and they're like, oh, you have an alternative? And it's like, well, generally, no, there's no alternative. That doesn't mean, you know, if there were no alternative, that wouldn't mean you persist in doing something that causes more suffering, which schools do. So that's the argument there. But there are lots and lots of alternatives that exist already that are currently out there, and we need to develop more and also have more resources devoted to that. But basically, there are alternative environments that promote self-directed education. And these are places, and they're all very different because all, you know, all children are different, and all children have different needs. Some require a great deal more structure than others. Some require very little. You don't have that kind of flexibility in a school environment. It's cookie cutter. Everyone has to be treated the same. And the children are able to pursue the things that they're interested in, and the teachers exist, but the teachers are not teachers. They're mentors. And the best way to understand what a mentor is to go to a public library. And if you go to a public library, you tell the librarian, you know, I'm interested in books on dinosaurs or something. And the librarian will say, oh, here's all the books on dinosaurs. These particular books are very good. What aspect of dinosaurs are you interested in? Oh, you might also be interested in paleontology, or you might be interested in, you know, a whole list of other things that they can throw out because, you know, you're a kid. You don't have much experience, but the librarian, you know, is presumably knowledgeable and can share and open your eyes to all sorts of related things that might be interested in, you know, in. And when people are interested in something, you know, they will voraciously devour that, and, you know, they can spend hours and hours studying something, and it isn't worth because it's joyful because it's something they're interested in. Another thing that needs to be developed a great deal more with the resources that are currently going to compulsory schooling but should go elsewhere is developing apprenticeship type opportunities, ways that children can interact with businesses. A lot of businesses are really happy to have would be if there was the kind of support for it, development programs or opportunities to expose people to the businesses. You know, it could be marine, you know, the aquarium if they're interested in marine biology. Could be, you know, Wall Street, and Wall Street is very interested in attracting people from disadvantaged communities and towns. And one of the biggest hurdles to access isn't that there's a segregation. It's that there's no contact. There's no one in those cities that have where the students or the children have access to those kinds of environments. So the culture is so alien. Resources of that nature would help develop all sorts of social changes.
Thought-provoking conversation indeed. And listeners, we do have a few more minutes to chat with Kevin Soling, author of the Student Resistance Handbook. We'll take a quick break and pick up our conversation with him right after these words.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Kevin Soling. Joins us by telephone. He's the author of the Student Resistance Handbook. A little bit of background about our guest. Kevin, you're an independent filmmaker with documentaries that have aired on HBO, Showtime, The Learning Channel, even the BBC. I'm interested to know if you have compared the American educational system with some models in Europe, for example, in Britain, since your documentary has appeared on the BBC. They have the same problems over there, or is it different?
They have fundamentally the same problems. Sometimes it's less, but that's changing only because you have a more homogeneous environment, population rather. And homogeneity means that the culture of schooling is going to better reflect the culture of the broader society. That doesn't make the environment better, it just means that some of the internal contradictions don't surface. But there's a great more diversity that's cropping up, and I can certainly expect things are going to rapidly decline there. It's not that things are better there. You still have all the fundamentals of a top-down structure where the population is in captivity. And when I say captivity, I mean that quite literally. The social scientists define captivity as an environment where movement is limited and you're removed from an attached environment. You have limited privacy and you're tamed, literally tamed is the word that's used, such that flight impulse is diminished. Because all creatures, if you put an ant in a jar, the first thing it's going to try to do is figure out how to get out. Or spend all of its time trying to figure out how to get out. So right down to an insect, no human living creature likes to be in captivity, until they've been tamed, and come to accept it. And children are placed in captivity. They're segregated. This is again universal. And segregation, is one of the things that people don't consider, that they're removed. Martin Luther King said that when you take a segment of the population separated from the rest of society, deny them rights and privileges that others enjoy, and craft rules and obligations that they alone must follow. That's the hallmark of what the issues with segregation are, and students. Perfectly defines what students experience, and these are the things that we should, for the sake of the human will and dignity and for life to have meaning, that we want kids to be fighting against, and this is the importance of the book. You can't have what good are literacy skills if you've become acclimated to an environment of despotism where you're segregated and in captivity, and you come to accept this as a norm, and that's true in Europe. So far as social conditioning, they're horrible, horrible places.
Is it? Let's put it this way: at what age do you think students are able to comprehend some of the concepts that you're talking about? Junior high school, certainly not second grade, do you think? Or maybe, I don't know. How do you feel about that, Kevin?
It depends on the student. Some students are very aware at a young age. I think second graders are aware that there is... The notion of injustice is something that is pervasive. They've done experiments even on dogs. They'll give one dog a little more food than the other, and the dogs will get angry and stuff. Injustice is pervasive, and it exists in kindergarten, first grade, and there's the teachers, the educators, the faculty have set themselves up as the arbiters of justice, and it's not something that they wield with any responsibility. Injustice is so insanely pervasive, as is violence. Those features persist in kindergarten, first grade. But as far as the awareness of that is there, but they have nothing to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of, you know, the fundamental problem. Kids generally don't like school, even as young as first, second, third grade. They like being with their friends, so there is a component, but even that is something that one has to eye with a certain degree of suspicion. If you read the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, he talks about, you know, after his third attempt, I think, at escaping slavery, where he was finally successful, you know, he finds himself in New York City, and he's cold, and it's raining, and it's just absolutely miserable, but he's free. But he actually has, you know, these sentimental memories of being on the plantation because he was around all these people, you know, his friends and family. And you don't have that, you know, that's sort of the problem is schools, for all of its horrors, you know, people are still sentimental about it because they're with other people they know, but that's an artifact. That's not something that sells school. That's just, you know, a consequence of how it's structured, but it provides a certain basis for why people would appreciate it, but it doesn't mitigate all the other, issues, that I listed and described.
It's been a long time since I was in high school, so I'm trying to remember back to some of my feelings. I suppose some people might say that, you know, when students, kids of that age, say, well, you know, they hate this, they hate that, it's kind of, you know, when you're that age, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, a lot of kids hate everything, you know? I mean, it's kind of part of growing up. How would you respond to that criticism?
You're not dealing with a population you're dealing with a population that's experiencing school. I would say that do that same, you know, questioning, you know, not in an anecdotal way, and do it with students who aren't in the school environment, who are in, you know, these self-directed education environments, and see if they also have that same experience, and you'll find that they don't. All of that negativity, all of that attitude, the antisocial behavior is a consequence of schooling. Like I said, it makes people more, it diminishes empathy. The students who engage in self-directed education are much more socially conscious and strive to be contributors to their communities. Learned helplessness is, there's a study about that in 1991, which is perfectly explains, you know, that kind of apathy. Of course they're like that, but you're looking at a population that's been, you know, whose will has been destroyed, and you're saying, oh, well, look, you know, if they're going to be like this if they didn't go to school, and it's like, no, that's not how you, that's not how research is done. You need to be talking to the people who haven't been subjected to that environment and see if they exhibit those same traits.
Our time begins to run short, but I do want to ask you about a couple of things just to get your opinion on them. What about dress codes in the school, or regulations as to how long a student's hair can be? Can you talk about that? First of all, dress codes. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, they're all just features of control. They're just part of the school system. I don't know if you're asking if they help or hurt or something. It's just another factor or feature. I don't, you know, support anything, you know, that deprives people of, you know, of autonomy or will. But, you know, when in the school environment, you know, everything goes. They're just, it's abusive because they're not, they're not laws that are not rules that have any purpose other than to instill greater degrees of control and conformity. And so, yeah, they're I'm certain that they must be constructive, you know, to get kids to cooperate more and make, you know, them easier, more malleable, and easier to control. And that's everything that we should be fighting against if we care about, you know, the students as human being, and we care about, you know, the human spirit. But when it comes to kids, we don't care, and that's another feature of schools. It instills a contempt and for youth, and it also causes people to pathologize youth behavior, which is why the students are drugged to such a high degree. It's all about control, and it's schools are just an institution that represents a gross abuse of power.
You have been, first of all, Kevin, a little bit more background for our listeners. You have a master's in education at Harvard. You are currently a fellow for the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. You've been interviewed on lots of TV shows, the Colbert Report, Fox News, MSNBC. Do you Do you get a lot of critical feedback from your objections to the world of education and teaching? Talk about that a little bit. What do you hear from people?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I'm challenging a cherished institution that's been with us since, 1852 in Massachusetts. It's actually a fairly recent, institution schooling. It hasn't been around as long as people think. And it wasn't instituted for the purposes of literacy. It was actually brought in with the hope of promoting egalitarianism. The literacy rate before schools were introduced was 97.2% in Massachusetts, and it's been in a steady decline ever since. And the history of schooling is a history of reform. But yeah, I get tremendous pushback. I got tremendous pushback in at Ed School, obviously, because you have a lot of people who have a vested interest in promoting the system, and the school there is about teaching the system and ways to reform and improve the system. But actually faculty was very receptive because I can, articulate and defend a position, but the students, many of the students, not all, were very, threatened, because it invalidated their existence. But many have since come to me and said, you were right. I've had a bunch, who after being in the trenches, came to appreciate, my position.
One final question. What would happen to people under your vision, Kevin, when it's time to, try to qualify to be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, whatever, and they're, thrown into a standardized testing environment, large classrooms, system-like learning after being raised outside of that environment? Would they be able to deal with it?
So, great question. There's already plenty of statistical research evidence on this, where the students who are homeschooled today, and homeschooling unfortunately consists of students who are not necessarily homeschooled in the healthiest environment. So some homeschooling just copies what takes place in school, and I don't recommend that. Just where the parent then becomes the authoritarian figure. But there's plenty of homeschooling where it's where it's constructive. Like I said, inspired by self-directed education, they consistently dramatically outscore students who on standardized tests on average. But the remarkable thing there is the students who are in school who are taking the standardized test, their whole schooling experience is about studying for the tests, and their whole existence in school is devoted exclusively to the questions or the fields that these tests are designed to test. You're not going to get tests in astrophysics or mechanical engineering or things of that nature. Whereas the self-directed educated students will potentially, if that's where their interests lie, dramatically excel in all of these other fields as well. We already know for a fact that children who do not go to school dramatically outperform the ones who do. As far as going off to med school or things of that nature, those are voluntary institutions. College people are there voluntary. I have plenty of issues with colleges, but I don't think colleges should be abolished, and I think they can be reformed in many ways. But part of the problem right now we're seeing with schools is that students who are so oppressed by their environment in school are acting out in very irrational ways in college, because they're just kind of striking everywhere at any authority as opposed to any kind of coherent vision of attack of issues, and with a lack of full understanding of what they're even calling for.
He is Kevin Soling, author of the Student Resistance Handbook. And if you're looking for Kevin online, by the way, he spells Kevin with a C and not a K. Kevin, thought-provoking conversation. I thank you so much for it today. Thanks for sharing some time with us here.
Well, thank you so much for having me and giving me an opportunity to discuss this.
Sure enough, that's what we do here. Okay, so long now.
Cheers, thanks.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
We now join Pittsburgh Pirate Baseball in progress. They are in the bottom of the first inning, and it's a 1-1 game between the Pirates and St. Louis Cardinals.